Chapter 73. Fitzears picked up the drone of an aircraft. He released his hold on the wheel and stepped to the door of the bridge wing. A pair of helicopter gunships were beating along the shore from the north. His gaze swung back to the harbor entrance. A gray warship was charging through the channel at full speed, throwing up a big bow wave. A Soviet destroyer this time, pencil-thin, forward guns trained on the creeping, defenseless death ships. The chase that nobody could win was on. Jack stepped out onto the deck of the tugboat and looked up at the broken, twisted wreck of the Amy Bigelow's bridge. He marveled that anyone was still alive and manning the helm. He made a gesture to his ear and waited until a hand waved back in understanding. He watched as a crewman hurried to the freighter's stern and gave the same signal to Moe on board the Ozero Zaisan. Then he returned inside and called out on the radio.
"This is Pisto. Do you read? Over."
"Loud and clear," replied Pitt.
"I've got you," Moe added.
"This is as good a time as any to tie your helms and abandon ship," said Jack.
"Good riddance," Moe snorted. "Let these hell buckets go up by themselves."
"We'll leave our engines running at full ahead," said Pitt. "What about the Pisto?"
"I'll man her a few more minutes to make sure the ships don't circle back to shore," replied Jack.
"Better not be late. Castro's boys are coming through the slot."
"I see them," said Jack. "Good luck."
"Out."
Pitt locked the helm in the dead-ahead position and called up Manny. The tough chief engineer needed no urging. He and his men were swinging the ship's motor launch out in its davits 3 minutes later. They scrambled aboard and were beginning to lower it when Pitt jumped over the railing and dropped in.
"Almost left you behind," shouted Manny.
"I radioed the destroyer and told her to stand clear or we'd blow up the munition ship."
Before Manny could reply, there was an echoing thunder-like rumble. A few seconds later, a shell plunged into the sea 50 yards in front of the Pisto.
"They didn't buy your bill of goods," Manny grunted.
He started the boat's engine and engaged the gearbox to equal the ship's headway when they hit the water. The falls were cast off, and they were thrown broadside into the wash, almost swamping the launch. The Amy Bigelow swept past on her final voyage, deserted and destined for obliteration. Manny turned and saw that Moe and his crew were lowering the Ozero Zaisan's launch. It smashed into a swell and was thrown against the steel sides with such force that the seams on the starboard side were sprung and the bottom half awash, drowning the engine.
"We've got to help them," said Pitt.
"Right you are," Manny agreed.
Before they could come about, Jack had appraised the situation and yelled through his bullhorn,
"Leave them be! I'll pick them up after I cut loose. Look to yourselves and head for shore."
Pitt took the pilot's chair from a crewman who had smashed his fingers in the davit ropes. He sheered the launch toward the tall buildings lining the Malecon waterfront and crammed the throttle against its stop. Manny was looking back at the tug and the drifting launch that carried Moe's crew. His face went gray as the destroyer fired again, and twin columns of water straddled the Pisto. The spray crashed down on her upper works, but she shook off the deluge and plowed on. Moe turned away with a feeling of dread that he did not show. He knew he would never see his friends alive again. Pitt was gauging the distance between the retreating ships and the shore. They were still close enough for the explosives to devastate a major share of Havana, he judged grimly. Way too close.
"Did President Antonov agree to your plan for my assassination?" Fidel Castro asked.
Velikov stood with arms crossed. He was not offered a chair. He glared back at Castro with cold contempt.
"I am a ranking military officer of the Soviet Union. I demand to be treated accordingly."
The black, angry eyes of Raúl Castro flashed.
"This is Cuba. You don't demand anything here. You're nothing but KGB scum."
"Enough, Raúl, enough," cautioned Fidel. He looked at Velikov.
"Don't toy with us, General. I've studied your documents. Rum and cola is no longer a secret."
Velikov played out his hand.
"I'm fully aware of the operation. Another vicious CIA attempt to undermine the friendship between Cuba and the Soviet Union."
"If that is so, why didn't you warn me?"
"There was no time."
"You found time enough to clear out Russian nationals," Raoul snapped. "Why were you running away at this time in the morning?"
A look of arrogance crossed Velikov's face.
"I won't bother to answer your questions. Need I remind you I have diplomatic immunity? You have no right to interrogate me.
How do you intend to set off the explosives? Asked Castro calmly.
Velikov stood silent. The corners of his lips turned up slightly in a smile at the sound of the distant rumble of heavy gunfire. Fidel and Raoul exchanged glances, but nothing was said between them. Jesse shuddered as the tension mounted in the small barroom. For a moment she wished she were a man so she could beat the truth out of the general. She suddenly felt sick and wanted to scream because of the costly time that was drifting away.
"Please tell them what they want to know," she begged. "You can't stand there and allow thousands of children to die for a senseless political cause."
Velikov did not argue. He remained unmoved.
"I'll be happy to take him out back," said Hagen.
"You needn't soil your hands, Mr. Hagen," said Fidel. "I have experts in painful interrogation waiting outside."
"You wouldn't dare," Velikov snapped. "It is my duty to warn you that if you do not halt the detonation, you will be tortured. Not with simple injections like political prisoners at your mental hospitals in Russia, but unspeakable tortures that will continue day and night. Our finest medical specialists will keep you alive. No nightmare can do justice to your suffering, General. You will scream until you can scream no more. Then, when you are little more than a vegetable without sight, speech, or hearing, you will be transported and dumped in a slum somewhere in North Africa, where you will survive or die, and where no one will rescue or pity a crippled beggar living in filth. You will become what you Russians call a non-person."
Velikov's shell cracked, but very thinly. "You waste your breath. You are dead. I am dead. We are all dead.
You are mistaken. The ships carrying the munitions and ammonium nitrate have been removed from the harbor by the very people you blame. At this minute, agents of the CIA are sailing them out to sea, where the explosive force will only kill the fish."
Velikov quickly pressed his slim advantage.
"No, Senor Presidente. It is you who are mistaken. The sound of guns you heard a few moments ago came from a Soviet vessel stopping the ships and turning them back inside the harbor. They may explode too early for your celebration speech, but they will still accomplish the end results."
"You're lying," Fidel said uneasily.
"Your reign as the great father of the revolution is over," said Velikov, his voice sly and baiting. "I'll gladly die for the Russian motherland. Will you sacrifice your life for Cuba? Maybe when you were young and had nothing to lose. But you're soft now and too used to having others do your dirty work for you. You've got the good life and you're not about to let it slip away. But it's finished. Tomorrow, you'll only be another photograph on a wall and a new president will sit in your place. One whose loyalties extend to the Kremlin." Velikov stepped back a few paces and took out a small case from his pocket. Hagen recognized it immediately. "An electronic transmitter. He can send a signal to detonate the explosives from here."
"Oh, God," Jesse cried despairingly. "Oh, my God, he's going to do it. He's really going to do it."
"Don't bother to call your bodyguards," said Velikov. "They'll never react in time." Fidel stared at him with cold, bleak eyes. "Remember what I said." Velikov stared back contemptuously. "Can you really picture me screaming in agony in one of your dirty prisons? Give me the transmitter, and you will be free to leave Cuba unharmed."
"And return to Moscow a cowardly figure? I think not."
"It's on your head," said Fidel, his expression a curious blend of anger and fear. "You know your fate if you detonate the explosives and live."
"Little chance of that," Velikov sneered. "This building sits less than 500 yards from the harbor channel. There will be nothing left of us." He paused, his face as hard as a chiseled gargoyle. Then he said, "Goodbye, Senor Presidente."
"You bastard!"
Hagen leapt over the table in an incredible display of agility for his huge bulk and was only inches away from Velikov when the Russian pressed the transmitter's activate switch.